Chapter 23, Final Night, First Morning. Before sitting down with Dr. Wade, Holly told Bond to wait outside the door because she hadn't wanted him to hear what she feared was very bad news. But sensing this, Bond had lingered outside the door and caught some of Dr. Wade's words. Enough of them to understand the real situation, to understand that his father was not, in fact, coming back. Ever. Bond ran into the room and up to my bed. Sobbing, he kissed my forehead and rubbed my shoulders. Then he pulled up my eyelids and said, directly into my empty, unfocused eyes, "You're gonna be okay, Daddy, you're gonna be okay." He kept on repeating it again and again, believing, in his child's way, that if he said it enough times, surely he would make it true. Meanwhile, in a room down the hall, Holly stared into space, absorbing Dr. Wade's words as best she could. Finally, she said, "I guess that means I should call Eben at college and have him come back." Dr. Wade didn't deliberate on the question. "Yes, I think that would be the right thing to do." Holly walked over to the conference room's large picture window, which looked out on the storm-soaked but brightening Virginia mountains, took out her cell phone, and dialed Eben's number. As she did so, Sylvia stood up from her chair. "Holly, wait a minute," she said. "Let me just go in there one more time." Sylvia went into the ICU room and stood by the bed next to Bond as he sat silently rubbing my hand. Sylvia put her hand on my arm and stroked it gently. As it had been all week, my head was turned slightly to one side. For a week, everyone had been looking at my face rather than into it. The only time my eyes opened was when the doctors checked for pupil dilation in reaction to light, one of the simplest but most effective ways to check for brainstem function, or when Holly or Bond, against the doctor's repeated instructions, had insisted on doing so and encountered two eyes staring dead and unmoored, askew like those of a broken doll. But now, as Sylvia and Bond stared into my slack face, resolutely refusing to accept what they had just heard from the doctor, something happened. My eyes opened. Sylvia shrieked. She would later tell me that the next biggest shock, almost as shocking as my eyes opening, was the way they immediately began to look around. Up, down, here, there, they reminded her not of an adult emerging from a 7-day coma, but of an infant, someone newly born to the world, looking around at it, taking it in for the first time. In a way, she was right. Sylvia recovered from her initial flat-out shock and realized that I was agitated by something. She ran out of the room to where Holly was still standing at the big picture window talking to Eben IV. "Holly, Holly," Sylvia shouted. "He's awake, awake. Tell Eben his dad is coming back." Holly stared at Sylvia. "Eben," she said into the phone, "I have to call you back. Your father is coming back to life." Holly walked, then ran into the ICU with Dr. Wade right behind her. Sure enough, I was thrashing around on the bed, not mechanically, but because I was conscious and something was clearly bothering me. Dr. Wade immediately understood what it was, the breathing tube that was still in my throat, the tube I no longer needed because my brain, along with the rest of my body, had just kicked back to life. He reached over, cut the securing tape, and carefully extracted it. I choked a little, gasped down my first fully unaided lungful of air in 7 days, and spoke the first words I'd spoken in a week as well. "Thank you." Phyllis was still thinking about the rainbow she'd just seen when she exited the elevator. She was pushing Mom in a wheelchair. They walked into the room, and Phyllis almost fell over backward in disbelief. I was sitting up in my bed, meeting their gaze with my own. Betsy was jumping up and down. She hugged Phyllis. They were both in tears. Phyllis came closer and looked deep into my eyes. I looked back at her, then around at everyone else. As my loving family and caregivers gathered around my bed, still dumbstruck by the inexplicable transition, I had a peaceful, joyous smile. "All is well," I said, radiating that blissful message as much as speaking the words. I looked at each of them, deeply, acknowledging the divine miracle of our very existence. "Don't worry, all is well," I repeated to assuage any doubt. Phyllis told me later that it was as if I were imparting a crucial message from the beyond, that the world is as it should be, that we have nothing to fear. She said she often recalls that moment when she is vexed by some earthly concern to find comfort in knowing that we are never alone. As I took stock of the entourage, I seemed to be returning to my earthly existence. "What," I asked those who were assembled, "are you doing here?" To which Phyllis replied, "What are you doing here?"